Hello, six pack of confidence. Been so many nights since we first met. Glad to see you brought all your friends for another night of Plastic Cup Politics.
What's going on out there in podcast land? Welcome to a new episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRue. He is Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD. We are recording on April 19th, Sunday night. This is Plastic Cup Politics, a drinking and politics podcast based out of Arizona. Dr. Sean Hayes has his PhD in political science, but is a securities guy in the finance and travel industry, doing all that cyber stuff. I am a beer rep, and we talk about politics things. At Plastic Cup Pod is best way to hook up with us, and you can subscribe Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And we'll jump right into this when I say Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, how you doing and what do you have?
I'm doing damn well, sir. I'm feeling a lot better. Everyone in my house is feeling much, much better. We seem to have all recovered completely. And tonight I am drinking. I wasn't able to get anything local. Just they didn't have a decent selection of local stuff, but I did get a small batch thing. It's Unity Vibration, I think, is the brewery. And this is their Bourbon Peach American Wild Ale Kombucha Beer, which is a mouthful.
Yeah, I've seen them.
Yeah. So I've already tasted it. It's super good. It's really sweet. I mean, it doesn't taste a whole lot like beer, to be honest. It tastes more like a very heavily alcoholic kombucha. Our bourbon barrel-aged kombucha has double the rich, delicious bourbon flavor as it ages with whole organic peaches. Unique beverage is a culmination of the ancient process of kombucha brewing paired with the newer brewing process of a uniquely American high-gravity ale. It's good shit. And they had it on sale over at Whole Foods for 22 fluid ounces for like $7.99.
Not a bad way to go.
No.
I am drinking water because I got a little extra loose yesterday and made a fool of myself and made some bad choices. And I've been in a shame spiral all morning long. And here I am coming out of it. So I'm going to drink a little bit of water for this episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. Shout out to the virtual beer fest that was yesterday and my making an ass of myself. Like, pretty badly. Hey. Everybody, this is a drinking and politics podcast, but be responsible when you drink. It's I made some terrible life choices, but here I am, still alive, ready to do a podcast, and hey, let's just jump right into it. Speaking of the virtual beer fest, the small business loans ran out, and a lot of people did not get their small business loans, where places like Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and Shake Shack and a bunch of places got tens of millions of dollars. So Hopefully they're going to get a new bill passed through here pretty quick. And hopefully the people that were really hoping for that money will get it and be able to stay in business.
So part of this is that old adage, right? Like, no one likes to see how the sausage gets made.
Right.
Like they just want it to be tasty at the end. Right now, we're not getting either. We're not seeing how or rather, we are seeing how the sausage is being made. And it's fucking gross. And the sausage doesn't taste very great either, to be honest. But, you know, it's not necessarily part and parcel of this period of American history or this particular administration to say that the companies that are SMBs, right, small, medium businesses, Shake Shack isn't a small, medium business, but they still call themselves that. So small, medium businesses that happen to have much better lobbyists got their snouts in the trough before anyone else did. It's right now there's another bill in the works, another $450 billion. It looks like there might be a preliminary agreement on it. We'll have to wait and see, you know, which Republican crybaby this week decides to stomp their feet and whine and moan and
come in and risk their lives
and threaten to take their ball and go home because, you know, God forbid we establish a pattern in this country of actually taking care of each other, right? How horrible would that be? What we need to do is tell people, fucking suck it up. If you're going to die, go die. Get it over with already so that we can get our economy back on its feet. You don't have to die for Wall Street. You should be willing to die for small businesses. You should be willing to die for Main Street. That's the message we're getting right now.
Yes, I did not actually see on the news today, but I know that there was a Patriots meeting at down by the Capitol. There's also one, if you guys missed out, there's one tomorrow on Monday as well.
So here's the best part, right? I'm reading through the not just the headlines. I'm reading the articles about these protests that took place yesterday. One was in Austin, right? They're all in, by the way, it's not a coincidence that these are all happening in states that are considered battlegrounds in the upcoming 2020 election, right? Anyone who honestly believes that these protests are organically popping up only in places where Trump needs help in November is out of their goddamn mind, right? So, oddly enough, Texas actually is one of those states that's starting to turn purple, particularly in its major metropolitan areas. So one of the places where there was a protest yesterday was in Austin. And the one in Austin was hosted by none other than Alex Jones of Infowars.com, right? And you know what the big quote was in three different articles about that protest? Huh. The big quote was, a handful of protesters who voiced their disappointment at how small it was. We thought it would be a lot bigger, only like less than 300 people showed up. You really would expect that Alex Jones could draw a bigger crowd than that just because he's a fucking freak show and it's Austin. Who's not going to show up to see that, right?
People in the middle of a pandemic, apparently.
Exactly. So what do? You go to the numbers to figure out why these protests aren't manifesting themselves. Right now, about 70% of Americans are worried that the coronavirus restrictions will be lifted too soon. Not too late, too soon. The Republican, the GOP has gone so far off the rails. Like they're not grasping the very, very basic math that says that Americans are not with them. You know, it's something like around 30% of Americans who think that maybe, you know, that the restrictions need to be lifted now. 30%. Gee, guess how big Dumpster Fire's base is.
Right. Same, yeah. 30.
These are not organic protests, which, you know, does still happen in the United States, that people actually come out of their own free will without having been prompted and protest. But in this case, that's not what's happening. Right. These protests are entirely manufactured. They're manufactured in conjunction with the Trump campaign. They're coordinating with sort of local right-wing activists in order to try and create. It's the very definition of AstroTurf, right? And for those of you who don't know what that means, when you refer to a movement as grassroots in the United States, it's supposed to lend that movement credibility, right? It's coming from the bottom up. It's coming from the people, from the roots of the grass up. Right. And then you look at these movements that are supposed to look like they're grassroots, but in fact are actually being manufactured from the top down. Those we refer to as AstroTurf. They're fake. They look like grassroots, but they're actually made of fucking vinyl or whatever it is AstroTurf is made out of. These absolutely are not organic protests. They shouldn't be treated that way. They shouldn't be lent that credibility. And in the end, it's not going to matter, because they're so tiny and insignificant anyway. But for anyone who is concerned about them, that's what I would focus on, is that they're fake. They're bullshit. They're not real. They're being manufactured by the Trump campaign.
And hoping that you will run out there and risk your lives.
Exactly.
So funny, when we don't want laws controlling women's bodies, they're not all about that. But you try to give them laws that they have to stay inside. Oh, Nelly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that his message is even hitting with his base. Like, I think that there is, like, 300 people showed up. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Much less than the however many people had to show up in Wisconsin to vote, stand in lines for miles.
We will get to that, because that's got me fucking hot.
We're right there, man.
The levels at which our government failed the people of Wisconsin, right? All the way from the state level, starting with the, you know, their governor tried to do the right thing, but his response was kind of weak sauce. Then he gets blocked by the legislature in what is clearly a cynical ploy. Right. For those of you who aren't familiar, in Wisconsin, there was a presidential primary, but there was also another off-year election that was incredibly important. That off-year election was for a Supreme Court seat. The incumbent
State Supreme Court.
State Supreme Court. Sorry. Yeah. So, and this, by the way, is one of the reasons why you don't elect the members of your Supreme Court, is because you end up with shit like this. So one of the far right wing members of the Wisconsin State Supreme Court was up for re-election this time around. And in the polls was getting his ass handed to him by the young lady who was challenging him. And so the legislature came up with the brilliant idea that if they managed to suppress voter turnout, keep a bunch of those poor people home, right? Their people have already voted by mail, meaning white people, white, relatively affluent people have already voted by mail, so they can hang on to that Supreme Court seat. And it's incredibly important because there's a case in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court that the winner of this election will most likely be the swing vote on. And that case is about whether or not the government of Wisconsin can throw out or can basically purge 200,000 voters from the voting rolls ahead of the November election. It looks like now the court will most likely rule that that does violate Wisconsin's constitution and they'll throw it out. That's good for Wisconsin. It's good for all of us. But it is a fucking tragedy that people not only had to risk their lives, they had to risk the lives of their family. They had to risk the lives of their friends. They have to risk the lives of everyone they now come in contact with because they spent an entire day in close contact with hundreds of thousands of other people in the middle of a pandemic. They had to do all of that because first their state legislature failed them. Then it goes to their state Supreme Court, who, huge surprise, since that douchebag conservative hadn't lost the election yet, ruled against the governor and ruled that the election must still take place in person. Then the governor came up with an idea. All right, fine. We will extend the deadline for absentee ballots, right? So that more people can vote by mail. We can get a we can let everyone participate. We'll get all those ballots in. The Republicans sued to stop that from happening. And where does that suit end up? It ends up in front of the United States Supreme Court, which in an absolute travesty of justice invokes the Pearson principle or precedent, right? Which basically says the courts can't interfere in a material way in an election this close to voting day. To which Ruth Bader Ginsburg quite reasonably responded, but that's what you're doing now. That's what the Supreme Court majority was doing because they were reversing a lower court that had upheld the governor's extension of absentee balloting, right? So the Supreme Court is saying, like, you intervened, but we don't like your intervention, so now we're going to intervene, and that's okay, but your intervention was wrong and a violation of the Pearson precedent. The absence of logic from this ruling is fucking mind-boggling until you realize that every single conservative member of the court is bought and sold. They aren't jurists anymore. They can't be trusted or respected as jurists anymore. They are thieves and liars working hand in hand with the dump administration to try and make sure that he can steal the election in November. And we have to keep our eyes on them at all times. We have to remain vigilant because these fuckers are going to try and steal our democracy come November. I guarantee it. I predicted almost everything that has been happening thus far in terms of dump and his authoritarian tendencies. I am telling you, between now and November, they will try and steal our democracy.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder if it was the a Republican primary, whether they would have had their voters stand in those lines. Probably not. The other thing about it is that I've been seeing a lot about from Trump and all of the other cronies, including got to get it in here at some point in the show, Paul Gosar, screw that guy, saying that we can't have voting by mail because voting by mail is bad and that's how you get voter fraud and all these different things. One of my friends that I used to play kickball with is on the elections board. Like, she works for the elections. And so she was signed on with a bunch of other people saying that no, vote by mail is great. Like, I think that they, in Arizona, 80% is vote by mail already. Like, 80% of voters are signed up for vote by mail. Dude, what's adding an extra 20%?
We don't even have to look at Arizona, right? We can look at, there are states out there that vote entirely by mail now. Oregon is one of them. And the incidence of verifiable voter fraud in Oregon is almost undetectable, as it is almost everywhere. That's the problem with this voter fraud argument that cheese dicks like Paul Gosar keep making. There's no evidence. And they've tried, Mark. It's not like they haven't been looking. Like, the GOP has been desperate to find high-profile cases of voter fraud or any cases of voter fraud that they could publicize. And most of the ones that they find are their own voters.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't
the right-wingers double-dipping to try and in the 2016 election to elect Dump to office in the first place.
Wasn't the only – there was one in I want to say it was like West Virginia or something like that, where they had to rehold the election because the Republican was doing exactly what they're doing this and collecting ballots for people and doing stuff that he wasn't supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they basically have admitted at this point that the voter suppression is the only way to keep power.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what he said. He came right out and said, look, the provisions that the Democrats want in this bill, this voting bill, would ensure that no Republican ever gets elected ever again. Gee, what does that tell you? Right? If it is in fact the case that we pass a bunch of laws that ensure that the most people possible can vote, and that means no Republican ever gets elected again, that's not a problem with the system. That's a problem with Republicans. That means you need to change your shit up. What you're proposing is not what people want, and they're not voting for you. If you have to suppress voters to get into office, the problem is with you, not with the voting system.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump does have absolute power, so he can do whatever he wants, which is another one that I, you know, my little right-wing homies on Facebook, like, I thought you guys were for less government and were in like states' rights kinds of things, but evidently not. Evidently, you're fine with the president having absolute power. I don't know how you would have felt about that about 5 years ago, but now you're okay with
this. The states' rights argument went out the window years ago with Heller, right? The Second Amendment decision with regard to D.C. and Chicago. So that was a case where right-wingers were arguing that the federal government should be able to invalidate state and local laws restricting gun ownership. Or actually, in D.C., it wasn't even gun ownership. It was your right to openly carry a gun in certain areas, right? So, at that point, the right wing showed its hand. They're not about states' rights. They're not about liberty. They're about power. Right. Because as soon as it's something that's important to them, then goddamn right, Uncle Sam better put his boot on the neck of those fucking uppity states and local municipalities that are trying to take my guns away. Right. But if it's like, say, abortion, no, it's all about states' rights at that point. The states should be able to decide for themselves how they want to handle abortion, like Texas, which is using a global fucking pandemic to try and restrict abortion.
Right, that is not essential.
Yeah,
I've heard that from a couple of different places.
So the governor and the lieutenant governor in Texas, and remember, the lieutenant governor is the dipshit who said that older people would be willing to die in order to preserve the economy, and older people went, "What the fuck?" Even older conservatives turned to him and went, "Dude, you are out of your goddamn mind. Shut up. Don't say that. I'm not willing to die for somebody else's bottom line. Fuck you." So these two jackholes have both said over and over again that the pandemic's not a big deal. It's the equivalent of the common cold. We're not worried about it. We don't need to impose restrictions. But holy shit, we definitely need to restrict abortion because that's going to spread COVID-19 all over the fucking place. Like, it's just, there's no the illusion, right, that conservatives hid behind for years including with, you know, like conservative icons like Barry Goldwater and fucking Ronald Reagan, that they were about personal liberty and freedom and a set of principles stretching back to like classical conservatism and the reactionary movement against the French Revolution, shit like that. Like the illusion that they hid behind that that's what they were about, that they were making a principled stand, has evaporated entirely. It's gone now. No one believes it anymore. Except for maybe that 30% that is showing up for these goddamn protests, the Liberate Virginia protests or whatever. So I've said all I need to say on that. It's not about principles. It's about power.
And speaking of power and the absolute power, after stating that, Donald Trump went ahead and said, but I'll go ahead and let the governors decide what they want to do. Like there was any choice and the governors deciding what they were going to do, because that's the way that it always was. And his I have absolute power thing wasn't exactly as true as he may have wanted people to think.
But it's so yeah, great.
And he keeps flying with the goddamn governors of everywhere.
It's so great, right? So it's like it's your classic schoolyard wannabe bully move, right? Like he's not the real bully, because the real bully just shows up and beats your ass, right? He's the wannabe bully who tries to talk a bunch of shit, and then when you call his bluff, he's like, well, all right, fine, I'll let you do it this time, you know, but next time, your ass is mine, right? So he talks all this shit about he's got, you know, his authority is absolute, the country's going to reopen when he says it's going to reopen, and then clearly, so like 24 hours pass where no one says anything on the subject. 24 hours later, he comes out with this bullshit at his little daily press conference about how he's going to let the governors call their own shots. Clearly, somewhere in that 24-hour period, right, two people contacted him. The first was Bill Barr, right, his Muppet over at the DOJ. And Barr told him, no, there's no way for us to write a valid, a constitutionally supported legal justification for the claim you just made. It doesn't work. This is clearly up to the governors. The Constitution itself leaves it in their hands. The Bill of Rights leaves it in their hands. The 10th Amendment. Like these are all very important foundational laws for our country. No, we cannot write you a legal justification to invalidate them. The other person who contacted him is the current head of the Federalist Society, and I've lost track of that person's name. Now, here's what's important. The Federalist Society is the group that has been appointing Trump's judges for him. And they've been working hand in hand with Mitch McConnell, good old Moscow Mitch, to pack the courts with their slavering, idiotic, right-wing dreck that the Federalist Society commonly produces and tries to pretend are upstanding and talented jurists. And the head of the Federalist Society turned to him and said, there will be a revolution if you do this. And it won't be the Democrats who are coming for you with pitchforks and shotguns. And so 24 hours later, you hear Trump up there at his meeting. Fine. I'll let you get away with it this time. But next time, the power will be mine.
My choice.
Yeah, exactly. But there is a little bit of hope there, right? That even though there really are no adults left in the room, there are at least some people with enough of an instinct for self-preservation that they're not going to go down with him. And they're still willing to call him up and go, dude, you are out of your fucking mind. This isn't going to fly. Which bodes well for November. It bodes well in two senses, right? The first we've already talked about, the fact that his little liberate movement has sputtered. No one's showing up and no one cares because 70% of the country thinks we're actually ending the restrictions too soon. And the other is that there are still some people out there on the conservative side of the house that aren't willing to end up against a wall for him. And make no mistake, that is where they would end up. If this turned into a civil war, he has already lost the military. Right. Just based on that bullshit he pulled with Eddie Gallagher, he had already lost most of the military. For those of you who don't remember, Eddie Gallagher is the Navy SEAL who was convicted. So first, he was thrown out by the members of his own team for being untrustworthy and for committing war crimes, right? Then he was charged by the Navy, tried and convicted of committing those war crimes. And so he whined to the bloviator in chief on Twitter, and Donald stuck his big old dumb foot in the middle of everything, made a huge mess, and most of the Navy and the rest of the military looked at him and went, fuck you. You just put our lives in danger, right? Because you jeopardized the chain of command. Now there's always a possibility, including in combat, right? In an actual shooting war, that someone could go, I don't like this order. I'm going to tweet the president. It's a breakdown in the chain of command that can cost lives. And the people in the military know that better than anyone. And then you get to what he and his acting Secretary of the Navy did to Captain Crozier, right, of the USS Teddy Roosevelt, a nuclear carrier in the Pacific, currently docked in Guam, right, where they were having an outbreak of the coronavirus, and the captain was not getting a response from anyone in Navy command because everyone in Navy command wanted to keep everything under wraps for fear of pissing off that orange-tinted sack of monkey shit that's squatting behind the Resolute desk. And so Crozier wrote an open letter, right, that didn't go through secure comms. And that letter got leaked to the press, which is probably what he hoped would happen. And when it got leaked to the press, finally shit started to move. Sailors started to get pulled off of the USS Teddy Roosevelt. One of those sailors has already died, right? There's a couple thousand sailors on that ship, and like 500 of them have already tested positive for the disease, including the captain himself, who ended up in intensive care after he was removed from command, and the acting Navy secretary showed up on his ship and berated the sailors of the Teddy Roosevelt on video for clapping for their captain when he left the ship. Fuck that guy, right? Modley, I think is his last name. That's a motherfucker who definitely needs to be first against the wall when the revolution comes. And the Navy will definitely help put him there, right? They've got a yardarm with his fucking name on it. So he's gone, right? Everyone turned to him and went, dude, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, he called the other captain or the admiral an idiot. And then the next day, it's like, oh, who's the idiot now? Because now you're also looking for a job.
Yeah. No, you are definitely. So that's the thing. Crozier wasn't even looking for a job. He just didn't have command of that ship anymore. Chances are he will be put back in command of that ship. He never should have been removed in the first place. What he did actually was a violation of certain portions of the UMC, Unified Military Code of Justice, or whatever. He definitely should not have. Under normal circumstances, he shouldn't have done what he did. These are not normal circumstances. From either direction, right? A global pandemic of this kind we haven't seen in 100 years, and an absolute vacuum of leadership at the top. The civilian leadership at the Department of Defense is gone, man. Like, there are no adults left in that room. And even on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the quality of command has really started to be degraded by the leadership coming from the White House. So it's, on the one hand, it's tempting to say, hey, look, he shouldn't have done this. Like, there should be some repercussions. On the other hand, this was a dude who was looking to save thousands of lives, lives that were under his direct command and his responsibility.
Right. Lives that were looking to him for guidance. Like, yeah. He was in charge of those lives.
Yeah,
and he did what he needed to do to save those lives.
And clearly they thought he did the right thing.
Idiots.
Point being, the dumpster fire administration has by and large lost the military at this point.
I mean, there's all kinds of things. Pulling out of Syria, letting the Kurds get butchered. How about the kids born to military members on military bases overseas don't automatically get citizenship? All kinds of things of not making the military very happy. So,
and it's sad that we have to have this conversation as if it's something that could potentially happen, but it could. Right. If there is a civil war in this country, it is unlikely that the military will side with Dump and his administration. Right. Which means ultimately they lose any civil war that we end up fighting. And so there are some members of the conservative movement out there who at least have enough of an instinct of self-preservation left to go, nope, not hitching our wagons to that train, no. So, you know, that's hopeful for November, right? That's yay.
Speaking of November, and then there was only one, and now we're staring at Joe Biden. And I would like to go back to the very beginning of this election cycle when I said, hey, watch who you talk shit about and don't dog anybody too badly, because eventually you may have to rally around that person. And that seems to be what's going on with Joe Biden. Like, yeah, I'm going to vote for fucking Joe Biden. But the whole thing about all the Bernie people getting so upset about this, Bernie was my guy too, but I mean, he of the two, Bernie was my guy. And just everybody is so upset, and the Dem exit and all these different things. We have talked multiple times on this show about third parties and anything like, if you don't vote for Joe Biden, you're basically voting for Trump.
Yes. Not basically, you absolutely
you are.
Yeah. And look, we've seen it happen before. Right. The fuckers that voted for Ralph Nader in Florida handed the election to George W. Bush in 2001. Now, you can the whiny little bitches on the left can make all the arguments that they want about, you know, Al Gore ran a shitty campaign, blah, blah, blah. And in some sense, they're right. Nevertheless, the fact that 6% of the vote went to Ralph Nader in Florida tipped that 6% absolutely would have gone to Al Gore if the people who cast those votes had been responsible adults, but they're not. And they're showing today that they, in some cases, still aren't. The fact that there are news articles out there quoting people who are still reluctant to get behind Joe Biden, this isn't a matter of a principled stand anymore. This is life or death for our republic. Right? And it's not like the choice is between Trump and Trump light. Joe Biden may not be the dude you like, but Joe Biden isn't a fucking autocrat, right? Joe Biden is still going to govern on your behalf, even if you don't like him, even if you're a Sanders supporter, even if you're a fucking Jill Stein voter. He's still going to govern for you. Can you say that about the guy he's running against? You absolutely cannot. That guy wants to round you up and put you in a fucking camp. And still you're talking about, I don't know if I can support Joe Biden. Well, you know what? Fine. Fuck you. That's all I have to say at that point. Fuck you. You've proven that you are not a serious individual. You cannot be taken seriously. You cannot be relied upon. And you're not a good American.
And I would also like to throw out there, if more people voted for Bernie Sanders in the primaries, then we wouldn't be having this argument.
Well, yeah, and look, it's not like the primaries were unfair to Bernie, right? There's no argument to be made that there was some DNC cabal throwing the election for Joe Biden the way that they made the argument in 2016 with Hillary Clinton, right? That just didn't happen. Bernie couldn't get enough votes. That's elections, folks. You shouldn't be mad at Joe Biden. You shouldn't piss the entire country away. Right? Turn to Bernie Sanders and go, why didn't you run a better campaign? Why didn't you stop taking such hardline stances all the time? Why didn't you try and find some way to meet meet moderate Democratic voters in the middle somewhere? Right? The fact that Bernie Sanders absolutely refused to break from any of his principled positions, his left-wing positions, and try and tack right even a tiny bit is why he lost. Because the fact is he is a more charismatic candidate. He's a more likable candidate than old Joe. And I like Joe Biden. He seems like the kind of guy that would be great to go get shit-faced with. Right? Like, if you look at any of these not have a beer with, get shit-faced with. Like, super housed. Right? Joe seems like the dude I want to go do that with. Bernie seems like the guy I want to have a couple of glasses of wine with. That'd be fun. Right? Bernie is still more charismatic than Joe, but he could not find a way to remove the rod from his spine and bend a little bit. That's Bernie's fault, not Joe's,
and
not mine.
Also, and that was also the whole thing about Bernie is, guess what? Go back to the 70s. He's been saying the exact same thing. So, I mean, if you're going to go out on your own accord. Go out on what you believe, and I guess that's what happened.
Yeah. Even Bernie admits it at this point. That's why he endorsed Joe Biden, right? He had to admit that he didn't run a good enough campaign. He lost, and Joe's now the presumptive nominee, and we have to move forward on that basis with the unified goal of defeating Donald Trump, which is not just defeating a man, it's defeating fascism. When Trump made his my authority is absolute statement, and we talked about how, you know, most likely he got a call from Bill Barr and whoever the head of the Federalist Society is at this point. And they both told him, you're out of your goddamn mind, knock it off. At the same time, publicly, there were a bunch of governors who were also going, dude, what the fuck are you talking about? You're not going to tell us when to reopen. That's up to us. The Constitution is quite clear on this point. He then tweeted something. And it's, God damn it, it is. I know I've said this a bunch of times on the show before, but man, it breaks my heart that that's what our politics have descended to, where the occupant of ostensibly the most powerful office on earth, right? The person who literally has access to the football, right? That's the briefcase with the nuclear codes, can annihilate the entire planet. There are multiple daily columns in various print and digital media formats that focus on what is the president ranting about on Twitter today. That's just, man, that's a fucking heartbreaker. Not just because he's an idiot, but because there were enough people to put him in office,
right,
who looked at that kind of behavior and admired it, and who still haven't figured out how they were duped, right? Like, they still don't know. The only credibility the man has as a leader is from his fucking TV show. But none of them have figured out that that wasn't spontaneous. He wasn't improvising. There were 30 writers who wrote everything he said on that show. And there were editors after the fact who cut hundreds of hours of footage together into a single hour each night for his dumb fucking quote-unquote reality TV show. And there are people out there that still have not figured out that they were had. That show made him look like a good leader when in fact he is a bumbling idiot of the highest order. His daddy gave him all the money he could ever need in 1971. He has lost most of it. The reason he's fighting not to show you his tax returns is because the man is hideously in debt. He's not a billionaire. He's a pauper who most of his income comes from just licensing his stupid name. He doesn't build anything. He doesn't make anything. He doesn't lead anything. He slaps his fucking logo on shit and makes money off of it. And these people still haven't figured out that they were had. They still haven't figured out that they were taken for a ride. And it breaks my fucking heart. Because these are the people that we have to live with. These are the people we have to share a country with, a government with. And we have to figure out how to create a government that can give these people most of what they need, but still be vigorous enough to slap them on the wrist when they start asking for something stupid, like reopening the entire fucking economy in the middle of a global pandemic that is killing. Like, look, it's not hyperbole. There are thousands of people a day dying in the United States from COVID-19. It's not the cold. It's not even the flu, which kills, what, 35, 40,000 people a year? We're already well past that, and we're only a couple months in. The coronavirus, this novel coronavirus and the COVID-19 disease that it causes are the real fucking deal. The only reason that we're not reaching 1918 Spanish flu levels of mortality is because we have a modern healthcare system. And we could be doing even better if we hadn't been following the right-wing model of privatizing fucking everything. If we had a single payer system, if we had a federal government that was willing to coordinate a nationwide response as opposed to going, meh, let the governors handle it. We'd be doing even better than we are now. But those are the only reasons we haven't hit that level. We're seeing the exact same mechanic that caused 40 million deaths worldwide in 1918. And it's the fucking cytokine storm, right? It's an over-response of your own immune system that fills your lungs with fluid. And that's what kills people. It's a kind of viral pneumonia that's incredibly hard to fight. And it creates like cystic fibroids inside the passageways of the lungs that have to be cleared in order for the patient to ever recover. And most of them in 1918, they didn't make it that far. Now we have enough technology to try and help them limp through. My buddy from work just sent me a video of his friend getting out of the hospital in Boston. His friend was in a medically induced coma for almost 3 weeks while they tried to clear this shit out of his lungs. He went into the hospital one way, came out of the hospital looking like an emaciated version of himself, like a hollowed out version of himself. Thank God that dude's all right, man. I'm glad he made it out of there. But holy shit, this is not the flu. And you still have people out there, you still have these idiots out there that are willing to be led into believing that it is. And that breaks my heart. So getting back to where this whole rant started, during that 24-hour period, when the adults, in air quotes, were telling him, hey, don't be such a dummy, he tweeted out a still from the Mutiny on the Bounty. And for those of you who aren't familiar, the Bounty was a ship in the Pacific that was captained by a man named Bligh. Bligh was a real monster. What most people understand, that apparently Trump does not, is that Captain Bligh was the villain in Mutiny on the Bounty, right? But he tweets this out with a little message that basically says the governors who are telling him, hey, you don't have the authority to tell us when to reopen our economies, are mutineers, and that one day it'll come back around and they'll be punished for having committed mutiny. That's not the way any of this works. The governors don't work for the president, so there can't be a mutiny there. And goddammit, Bligh was the fucking villain. The mutiny was the best thing that could have happened to the Bounty because the man was a goddamn monster. So still, this idiot doesn't understand that he's painting himself as the villain, even when he's trying to make himself look good, and his supporters fucking eat it up. That tweet was retweeted so many goddamn times uncritically, and they just don't get it. So anyway, I wanted to make sure that I covered that because that kind of shit is fucking dangerous, Mark. You couple that with the Liberate Virginia, Liberate whatever that he tweeted out in support of these protests, and you have a recipe for someone to go and shoot one of these governors and claim that the president told him to do it.
Michigan, yes.
That's bad. Bad, bad, bad. So everybody, keep your eyes peeled. Watch these fuckers like a hawk.
And when you see something go wrong, at Plastic Cup Pod, let us know. Eh?
Hell yeah.
That's how we tie a bow on this bad boy. Nice. Yeah, so I'm sure you guys had a wonderful time. You can go ahead and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher at Plastic Cup Pods. Way to hit us up. Keep doing these when we do. This one's going to be nice and short, so I'll probably be able to get it out pretty quick. We'll see. Anyway. That's it. Stay home.
I'm sorry I didn't give you much of a chance to talk tonight, dude. I had a lot of shit I was really eager to yell about, and I realize now in hindsight I kind of talked over you a bunch. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right. I talked way too much yesterday, and it did nothing but get me in trouble. So
we've all been there, brother.
Yep.
We're going to get out of it. Just ask Jenny about Danny's sometime, and she'll tell you all about the last time I made a horrible mistake while drinking too much.
All right. We'll save that for the next episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. Thanks, guys. Go. We'll talk to you again soon.
Later, all. It's just a